Now I was almost sure that the Jew kept practically all his money at the bank. But I wanted my revenge, so I swore to my new lover that it was hidden somewhere in the house. "You must make him tell you," I cried, and shook my fist in the old Jew's face. They pulled the gag out of his mouth, and someone put a dagger against his throat. "Tell us where your gold is hidden," hissed Gaston. "It's all in the bank except 200 francs, which are in the top drawer of the bureau downstairs." "Liar," cried I, "you knows there is over 25,000 francs hidden in the house." "My God, is that you, Ninai?" "It is, you pig," I replied, "and I'm here to have my revenge, so you had better tell us where the money is at once, or you'll be sorry you ever met me." "I am that now," he began, but I interrupted, "You beast, take that," and scratched his face as hard as I could. He began to yell, and Gaston at once plugged his mouth. "We've wasted enough time," he said. "Bring up that charcoal fire." Several of the band, including myself, seized him and pushed his naked feet into the hot embers. Some held them firmly there, while others blew the charcoal till it burned like a furnace. The Jew writhed and struggled, but no sound came from his lips. He was far too securely gagged. At length Gaston said, "Now we will try again," his feet being taken from the fire and the gag from his mouth. "The treasure," said Gaston. "Quick, where is it?" "In the bank. I wish to heaven it were here, and then you would not torture me. For God's sake let me go," he moaned feebly, but Gaston, more furious than ever, pushed the gag back, and then turned to me. "Do you think he's speaking the truth?" "No, lies," I shrieked. Back then to the fire, and the torture recommenced. Suddenly one of the band who had been watching to see we were not disturbed rushed into the room. "Quick, someone has given the alarm." There was a stampede, some going through the door, others out of the window and down a pipe. I seized Gaston's arm. "You fool," I shouted, "are you going to leave the Jew alive to give evidence? We shall be caught if you do." "You're right, my dear," he replied, and turning back cut his throat. We escaped, but not long after Gaston knifed me one night when he was drunk, and in due course I arrived here. Now you understand why I'm in this awful room. Aren't you sorry for what you did to the Jew?" "Sorry? Not I, it's the one thing that consoles me. But I wish to hell I could get out of this place." I turned to the young doctor. "But what pleasure do you find in torturing her? It's true she's ugly now. Her wickedness has made her so, still, she is a woman, and has done you personally no harm. Why do you do it?" he replied. "Will you take her place?" "Not I. But still that's rather different from torturing her when she's done you no harm. What pleasure do you get out of it?" "Pleasure? I don't get any pleasure out of it. At first we do feel a kind of fiendish pleasure in seeing others suffer. Moreover, for a time the more wretched we grow the more we like to compel others to feel wretched. But after a time this mockery of a pleasure ceases, and we go on doing this sort of thing mechanically. We don't feel any pity or sorrow for our victims. Such feelings were dead in our hearts years before we died, and, moreover, they don't deserve pity. They have all been about as cruel as we. But we feel no pleasure in doing it. It's a hollow, joyless world here. Whatever you try to do to pass the time. Time? Damn it, there is no such thing as time." As he spoke, he turned away from me and savagely plunged a scalpel into the poor wretch who lay on the slab before him. I began to walk out of the room, but almost at once I was seized by three or four scientists. "This fellow will do in place of the one that's escaped," shouted one. "No, you don't," I cried out, but in spite of my desperate endeavors they dragged me to the slab and fastened me down as they had formerly fastened him who escaped. Then I underwent the most fearful torture, but all the while I kept my wits about me and watched for an opportunity to get away. Before long it came. Two of the doctors started quarreling. While their attention was thus diverted I sprang to the floor. I called to God for help, and made a dash for the door. One or two tried to stop me, but most paid no heed. Such scenes were constantly occurring. Soon I was through the door, and out again on the desolate plain, running for all I was worth. After a while, As I found I was not pursued, I slackened my speed, and began to think over my experiences. One point especially struck me then, and has impressed me ever since, and that was that in hell it is extremely difficult to get spirits to combine and work together for any common object, at any rate for any considerable period. Had there been any effectual combination among the doctors, I could never have escaped. It seemed quite easy for a few of them to unite for a moment to make me prisoner, but this done, most forgot all about me, and started on something else. They were continually quarreling among themselves, and even while I was there I saw more than one scientist placed on the dissecting slab by some of his companions. Indeed, the only times when effective, united action was possible was in such cases as my own conquest of Paris of the Revolution, where a man with an iron will was able to dominate and force a large number of others to obey him. Yes, the entire absence of the power of voluntary combination for any object is one of the characteristics of hell. Well, now I must leave. Getting up, he walked out of the room. I followed his example, and, saying goodbye to H. J. L. willed that I should return. Chapter 23. Charka. Athens, letter from the officer. June 13, 1914. After my experience in the hospital I was more than ever anxious to get out of that division, but for a long time could find no way in which to do so. I kept away as much as possible from the city of hate, or, indeed, all cities, for they all partook of the same nature. On one occasion I blundered suddenly into what seemed like a Kaffir kraal. It was a fairly large one, and I soon discovered it was ruled over by the redoubtable Charka. He seemed to be living very much the same sort of life that he had lived on Earth. One of his favorite amusements was to set his tribe to dig a huge pit, and when it was finished he would surround them with his imps, and order the latter to charge down upon them from all sides and hurl them into the pit. At other times he would order an expedition against a neighboring kraal, for there were many such kraals around, storm it, and drag off a large number of people as slaves. He had many other pleasant little devices for amusing himself in a way similar to that which he had done on Earth. In short, I found that even in hell like tends to attract like, and the niggers still tend to act like niggers and settle together, harking back to their old institutions. I had rather a rough time there, for I was of course soon spotted and dragged before Charka, who declared I must be either a missionary or a trader. In either case I was an enemy, so he ordered me to be flung into a bonfire, which was specially made for me. Of course you are used to these material descriptions, and understand that that means really that their wills impose the idea of a bonfire on mine. Well, I suffered rather badly, but not so badly as I should have done had I fallen into the hands of civilized men, for these savages, as a rule, don't understand how to visualize and impose such visualizations on others as well as do the more civilized spirits. I managed to escape out of the fire, and though flung back again and again several times, at length succeeded in getting clear. This was due to the fact that news arrived that a neighboring chief was marching on the kraal at the head of quite a large army. Charka was at once so busy organizing his forces, that I slipped away almost unnoticed. But just before I got quite clear I noticed a man rush at Charka and try to stab him. It was, I learnt, a brother of his, and amid the confusion I bolted. At another time I found myself in Athens. I had always thought of it as a beautiful city of dazzling whiteness, with splendid sculptures. It may be so in the realms of faith, but down there in hell I think it was one of the most dreary places I have ever seen. The very remnants of its beauty still visible through the ruin were the more pitiable. Its temples were broken and ruinous with wrecked pediments and fallen columns, and filth and slime were present everywhere. Its statues were mutilated, and, worse, transformed from the beautiful to the vile. Even what once must have been fine now appeared distorted. The faces seemed full of evil, repulsive, vicious, and hideous. It was as if the low vices and evil lives of the people who dwell there and their bad motives had entered into the statues and transformed them from things of beauty to monuments of iniquity. I got a bad reception there. A common informer at once raised the cry, "A spy, seize him." I was dragged into what seemed like a marketplace, and at once tried. It was of course a perfect mockery of a trial, as you will readily guess. I was convicted and condemned to drink hemlock. I did so, I had no alternative. Besides, I knew it was all a hollow sham, I could not die. The effect was peculiar. I grew stone cold at the feet, and gradually that coldness reached up and up till it touched the place where, had I been still a man, my heart would have been. I seemed to collapse on the floor, and at once the spectators cried, "He's dead." So they picked me up and carried me out through the city gates, threw me down, and went away. Of course I was not really dead, but for some time I was unable to do anything, so strong was the spell, as it were, that they had imposed upon me, to the effect that I was dead. However, before long they found something else to think about, and forgot me. At once I found myself becoming normal, and rising up, hurried from the place. Chapter 24. The first messenger of light. By now I was about as sick of the division of hate as anyone could possibly be, and determined to make an effort to get out. I therefore knelt down on the stony ground and prayed. My God, how I prayed! At length an answer came, and in an unexpected manner. I saw coming towards me a light, yes, a real light, not the horrible red glow which passes for fire down here, and has all the unpleasant effects without the pleasant ones. No, this was a real light, silvery, clear and pure, come down from the realms above. It drew nearer and nearer, and by degrees I perceived that the light came from a man, or was it an angel? Yes, I felt sure it must be an angel. I stretched forth my hands in longing prayer, but as he came nearer and nearer I felt an intense pain. It was the light, and it seemed to be eating into my soul. At length I could bear it no nearer, and cried out in agony, "Stop! Stop! For the love of God, stop! It burns! It burns!" Then came an answer like the notes of a silver trumpet, "You have called for help, and I have come to give it. But all progress entails a price, and the price you must pay is the burning away of the filth which encumbers your soul. If you remain here, you will suffer and keep on suffering till you do come. If you go with me, you will suffer only for a little while and will be progressing, and that means you will be going away from suffering, slowly, perhaps, but surely. I'll come, I'll come," I sobbed, "I'm inured to pain by now, lead on, and I will follow as well as I am able. O God, help thou my stumbling steps. I will come no nearer," he answered, "but follow me. A light shines in the darkness, and now as then, the darkness comprehendeth it not." I will not now describe how he led me out of that division, it would take too long. Goodbye for the present. The officer. Trance visit. Monday night, June 22 ND,1914. As before, I left my body behind, and passing out of the physical landscape entered that of the spiritual plane. As soon as I reached H.J.L.S. room, he said, "The officer is waiting to go on with his narrative." The latter at once began. I followed the messenger at a distance. We climbed up and up, over rugged mountain sides, until on reaching the crest of a line of naked, barren hills I found, stretching before us, a kind of vast marsh. Across the marsh ran a broken path, which every now and then seemed to vanish, only to reappear again. All around was a thick fog, but the fog seemed lightest over the path. The messenger of hope led the way along this quaking path, and I followed at a certain distance because of the intensity of the light which came from him, and which at the same time illuminated the path we were on. Suddenly out of the darkness loomed a great figure, terrible and horrible. I knew him at once by instinct as the personification of hate. He barred our way and cried, "None who have entered these realms may ever depart. Return the way you came, or I will throw you into the marsh." But my rescuer answered, "Out of the way. In this sign I conquer," and, raising his hand, he held aloft a cross. As he advanced, the great spirit of evil, who was no man, but a being similar to the personification of drink, whom I had seen on the astral plane, shrank away, and at length, being driven off the path, hovered over the marsh. As soon as my rescuer had passed him, he dived forward towards me, dividing me from my newfound friend. In an agony of fear I turned and fled, but my rescuer, seeing what had happened, turned and sprang after me. At once the evil spirit fled away from him into the marsh, while the messenger of light seized me by the arm. The pain was intense, for he seemed to be a living fire, yet in reality he was but a man who had come down from the realm of belief to help and save those in hell. After a while the pain grew less as the light burnt away more and more of the evil in my nature. Meanwhile we crossed the marsh unmolested, and found ourselves in front of the gate of a city. "This is the city of lust," he explained. "It is part of the division of hell devoted to the sins of the flesh. The greedy and covetous, thieves, gluttons, and immoral people come there. In this city lust rules and you must pass through it and resist the temptations to which you will be exposed. If you do not resist them you will have to remain in that division, at any rate for a time, but if you do resist them, you will be able to pass through. But even so you will not climb into the next division unless you help someone else to escape also. Now I must leave you and return to my work of rescuing souls from the city of hate." Chapter 25, The Fourth Division. The Lusts of the Flesh. Corinth. I passed through the gate, which was guarded by an evil-looking man, who was disporting himself with a woman who at one time had been beautiful, but now looked hideous from the lines vice had imprinted on her face. Once inside I gazed round at the place which at first I did not recognize, and so stopped a man in the Greek costume who was hurrying along and asked him, "What is the name of this city?" He stared at me in amazement, and at length said, "Where have you come from, stranger?" "The wildest barbarians know of Corinth. Look at the famous gulf." As he spoke he pointed at the marsh, adding, "Why, you have just come up from the gate leading to the harbor." "What? Comma, do you call that filthy marsh the beautiful gulf of Corinth?" I cried in amazement. "Yes, it does seem to be rather dirty, though why I can't understand. And it's very overcast here nowadays." "Why, it's because you are in hell," I began, but he interrupted me. "Nonsense, the truth of the matter is that we have displeased the gods by discovering the secret of eternal life. We never die here. I don't know how long I've lived, but it must be for thousands of years. I must admit I sometimes wish I could die. I get weary of it, weary of always trying to do the same things, and when one's done them, what does one get? They call it pleasure, pa." Remembering the advice of my former deliverer I said, "Why not try and escape? Come with me to a more congenial part." He laughed. "It's very plain you are a stranger, or you would not suggest such a foolish idea. If I left here I should die, and, after all, I don't want to do that." "But you are dead, and, being dead, how can you die again?" "If I were dead, how could I be alive?" "You're a madman. Keep your mouth shut or the people will cast stones at you." Next moment he had gone, and I began to walk along what approximated to a street. Many of the buildings seemed to have collapsed, and all were filthy, but I could see that once they must have been fine, and were in the ancient Greek style. "It's strange. I've seen while on earth many ruins, but they were not disfigured by the sense of squalor and sin which disfigured those in hell. The nearest thing I ever saw on earth to give one the same idea was certain suburbs which had fallen on evil days, and their fine houses had been turned into tenements for people of shady character." While I was cogitating over these matters the street, which had been practically empty, became full of women and men, who came running in a wild bacchanalian rout. On they came, and next moment I was surrounded by them. Two women flung their arms round my neck, while a man filled a cup from his goatskin with what looked like wine and pressed it to my lips. It was ages since I had had any offer of kindness from anyone. In the city of hate all that each man thought of was how to inflict pain on his neighbors and avoid pain himself. The two women spoke words of endearment to me, and the man pressed me to drink, and I did so. At once there were wild shouts of delight, "He's one of us." The wine seemed sour and unpleasant, and instead of slaking my thirst only increased it. I drank more and more in a desperate effort to obtain satisfaction, but with no result. Along we went in a wild disorderly throng, and I leave you to guess the scenes which were enacted. Drink and lust reigned here, but not necessarily cruelty. true, occasionally cruel acts would be done here, and often lust would lead men on to cruelty. But the result of the latter was that the man was driven out by the people of Corinth, as a disturber of the public peace, and compelled to go to the cities of hate. Occasional and sporadic acts of cruelty do not bring about exile. It is only when these became a regular part of a man's life that the pleasure-seeking populace becomes annoyed and ostracizes him. But though cruelty was not encouraged, drunkenness, gluttony, selfishness, and lust were, above all lust. I will not attempt to describe the abominations I witnessed there, but the whole object of the community was the encouragement of immorality in every form. Every woman was what on earth would have been called a prostitute, and every place of amusement harped on the same theme. But I will draw a veil, your imagination must supply what I prefer to leave to it, only I will say that there was no satisfaction in anything we did. We seemed to be driven on by wild desire, but utterly unable to gratify it. Well, I drifted with the tide, forgetful in part of the advice of my rescuer, but more because my natural inclinations led me to long for my former amusements. Unsatisfactory as this existence was, it yet came as a great relief after the horrors I had seen and anguish I had suffered in the division below. I found that there were many other cities devoted to lust besides this version of Corinth, for, be it understood, there are other and nobler forms of Corinth in these realms of half-belief, and even in other divisions of hell. Of these other cities of lust, I visited a place that seemed like Paris and another like London. After a while I blundered into a part of the latter which seemed to be given over to thieves of various sorts. Here they stole from each other, but, strange to say, no sooner had they succeeded in stealing something from their neighbors than the thing stolen turned to dust. More and more weary I grew of this empty world where nothing we did brought any real satisfaction, and real aim in life there was none. This division was the first one in which I saw a church. It was run by a man who had started some weird sect on earth with the object of doing himself well at the expense of his dupes. He had made quite a good thing of it at first, but in time his unworthy object, together with his secretly vicious life, had been recognized by most of his followers, who therefore forsook him. But a few fools still continued to follow him. After death he had come here, and still tried to gather a congregation by means of his sophistries and extraordinary prophecies. He got one, two, of sorts, consisting in the main of thieves, forgers, bogus company promoters, and such like. I came across several former acquaintances, who seemed quite pleased to see me. The service was the strangest mockery of a service. It was simply a blasphemous parody, yet, strange to say, it was not so intentionally. Both preacher and congregation strove to say a proper service, but whatever they said seemed to become perverted as it was being uttered. The hymns and prayer became blasphemous mockeries or licentious songs. More and more weary I grew of the whole place and began to long for a means of escape. At length, as I was walking through a square in Chis Paris, I saw a crowd standing round a man, jeering and laughing at him. On approaching him I saw how bright he was, and knew at once by that he must be one of the messengers. I stood among the jeering crowd and listened. The man was pleading with his hearers to remember how once as little children most of them had thought pure thoughts and dreamt of heaven. Were they now tired of this wicked, empty life? Why not repent and leave these dark and dismal regions? At this point he was interrupted by a man who cried out, "Stop those lies, we are all liars here, so what's the use of trying to deceive us like that? The very religion to which you refer tells us that we are damned eternally. What's the use then of trying to repent? We can't, and if we could, it would be useless." Another shouted, "You are only a more clever fraud than most of the other parsons down here. You look like an angel, but you are simply out to make money out of us like the rest. Why, only last week a fellow was going round beguiling fools to give him money, promising that, if they would, it would be a proof that they were repentant and he could then get them out. Several fools actually believed him, and of course as soon as he had got the cash he bolted. I knew that this was true, for this artful fraud had tried to swindle me. But having seen a real messenger, I knew the difference and wasn't taken in. but I likewise recognized this man as a genuine messenger, and so, when the crowd dispersed, which it did, cheering as the man ceased, I went up to him. Chapter 26. He is helped by another messenger. I can see you are genuine, I began. Can you get me out of this place? I'm sick of it. If you truly wish to escape, I can, he replied. I long to do so, I replied. Kneel down here then and say the Lord's Prayer. I will say it with you to revive your memory. I looked round and saw that the square was full of people, and for a moment I hesitated. Then I thought of what I had already suffered, and beside it the ridicule of these fools was nothing, so I sank on my knees and slowly repeated the Lord's Prayer after him. When I had finished he cried, Good, now follow me, and do not let them lure you from my side. Quickly we hurried through the city. But we were not to get away without opposition. A couple of men stepped suddenly in front of us as we came in sight of the edge of the town, for in this part there was no wall. The men cried, Here, where are you off to? My rescuer replied, We are going about our business, you go about yours. Thanks, but this is our business. You are one of these pestilent fellows who are ever trying to persuade our friends and boon companions to desert us. We are sick of your pious humbug. Be off and leave him, or you'll be sorry for it. My rescuer raised his hand threateningly. Begone, you accursed spirits, out of my way. At once the two raised a shout, one of the enemy sees him. And immediately a crowd rushed together, which became more and more threatening. My rescuer drew himself together, and raising his hand concentrated his will. Out of my way in the name of God Most High. As he spoke he strode forward and I followed. The crowd fell back before us, and though they murmured and threatened, it seemed as if we should pass through without molestation, so greatly they feared the strong will of my rescuer. But just as I thought we were safely through, a woman sprang from the crowd and threw her arms round my neck. She was one whom I had ruined when on earth, and she came to claim me as her own. My rescuer seized her arms, untwined them from my neck, and threw her back into the crowd screaming. Then one of the two men who had previously barred our way sprang at my throat. I drew my will together and struck him to the ground. He sprang at me again, and this time his companion also followed suit. But my rescuer bent quickly forward and touched each of them on the arm, and they fell back shrieking, with the arm which had been touched withered as if by fire. Thoroughly cowed, the mob fell back, and we passed through safely. Soon we were out in the open country. Don't let there be any misunderstanding, I use the word to distinguish it from the town, but there was nothing country-like save the lack of houses. There were no trees, no grass, no birds singing, not a flower, nothing but hard rock and sand and stones. On we journeyed, and presently in the distance I saw a faint, star-like light. Is that another rescuer? I cried. No, he replied. That is a small mission center or rest house, and to it I am taking you. It stands at the edge of the barrier which separates this division from the one above in which are to be found materialists for the most part. There I hope you will be able to rest for a short season and obtain strength to enable you to pass through the remaining divisions of hell up to the schools. Slowly the faint star grew stronger, and after a while I found we were following a path, narrow, but well beaten, as if by many passers-by. Who has beaten this path? I inquired. The messengers who passed to and fro rescuing the lost. You seem surprised, but for how many countless ages, as men on earth reckon time, and therefore how much longer to us who labor here, have the messengers come seeking the lost? Long before Christ came down to earth there were spirits laboring here. Was the land of after death organized very much as it is now even before the opening of the Christian era? Yes, save that more spirits as a rule had to pass through hell. The more primitive a man is at death, as a general rule, the less will his spiritual side be developed. The less his spiritual side is developed, the longer he will be on the astral plane, and the more likely to pass for a time into hell. But there comes a point in the development of man when his intellect becomes developed at the expense of his spiritual side, and then sooner or later the advance of civilization will have a setback. Thus in the days of the Greeks and Romans the intellect outran the spiritual development, And so hell became crowded with men who refused to believe in God or a future life. The fall of that civilization, though for a time it threw back civilization, made it easier for men in the West to develop their spiritual side. At times I fear that a similar catastrophe may once more be necessary.